Hello there everybody, my name is Sophie Aldred and I had the enormously great pleasure of playing the character of Ace in Doctor Who. And I would like to just remind you that you are listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. It's not private, it's public. And it means that you, the public, can listen to this Gallifrey Public Radio. And I'm very honoured to be on it and interviewed by it. So I hope you really enjoy the interview with me and all the other amazing stuff that they put out. And thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting Doctor Who all these years and for all this time. Because without you, Doctor Who wouldn't be the show it is today.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 421 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where after 8 years, maybe it's time to divulge how we all came to meet on this podcast. All we need is a life-threatening event to trigger the flashback sequence. Anybody got any blasting caps? I'm Jay.
I'm Julie.
And I'm Kier. This week, Chris Chibnall stays in the writer's seat for the beginning of a two-part finale to Torchwood's second season. Fragments begins with a bang, literally. And then launches into a series of looks back to the entry points for 4/5 of the team. Because up to this point, we only knew
1/5
how Gwen got there. Right off the cuff, we've challenged our memory to this entire season, but this is where we get to the real meat and potatoes of what drives the really compelling storyline. Jay, how did you feel about Fragments as the obvious setup to a two-parter?
I really enjoyed it right up towards the end. I thought that it was fun. It was interesting to go back and see things, and it did kind of colored things looking back on them. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I mean, I also enjoy the story. I think it's really fun to see how everyone joined the team. I'm a huge fan of these types of episodes in general for most shows because, like you're saying, it sort of adds a lot of color and gives you some of their backstory that how else do you put it in there? So I enjoy finding out the people before we knew them.
Right. Interesting that they waited almost 2 complete seasons to give that to us. And that's something that I'll want to discuss with the both of you as we dig through the rubble on this one, so to speak. Come on. I have to.
You know, these creatures are very quiet. Maybe they're sleeping.
Or hatching.
Or maybe they aren't creatures at all.
Just explosive devices.
Snap.
So, the setup is there from the opening seconds. Everyone runs in. Everyone but Gwen runs into a building. Ooh, there's bombs. Kerflui. Yeah. The one person we already know how they got to the team is not there at the moment. And then we go through, as mentioned, these series of flashbacks. So the idea, just the mechanics of how Chibnall sets this one up is I think, pretty credible. I mean, the whole idea of how to get everybody who needs to have this exposition there, and I think story-wise, we're at a point where it would make sense why Gwen, you know, slash Reese are not there at the moment. This is what Reese was talking about, right? As far as the work-life balance?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Right. There are probably times where, yeah, just Gwen's not there. Turns out she just slept in on accident or by accident. So I think that's a funny play. Obviously, that's not right at the beginning, but it gives you the answers in a legitimate way.
And I like the fact that, and jumping ahead a little bit, that once they get there and Reese is like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, this could have been you. And Gwen's like, that was not the time.
Really?
And also Jack saying, why is he here? And Gwen's going, now is not the time. He dropped me off. It's fine. Just let's go.
It's my two husbands with police
fighting
constable.
Like, they're Gwen the people. Married ones.
Exactly right. It's not a love triangle unless you can close up that third side.
But
it's just a love V.
Like, I thought it was kind of fun that the, clearly you've got the entire team in the building, four separate explosives going off. Like, they're not all going to survive them. Well, you've got a built-in, like, yeah, sure, somebody dies, it's Jack. Of course it is. Like, everybody else is fine, but no, Jack gets the full brunt of the, like,
very, very carefully placed in all of their near-miss injuries.
He had no dirt on his face.
That is true. Although they didn't keep his face intact, because there's like a later sequence where, you know, after, well, getting ahead of ourselves, but the whole the punch-up, he does have a pretty messed-up face for a little while. I actually remember remarking, I'm like, I think that's as dirty as Barrowman allowed his face to get for the first two seasons.
Well, yeah.
And I think that's because he didn't die, so he didn't heal. I think he has to die for it to heal all the way.
Minor injuries stick around a little longer?
I think so. I think it's a normal healing process. He's not Wolverine, except when he dies.
Except
when
he
is. I don't
think
that ever plays out or really gets talked through, but
there
has to have been some sort of decision about that at some point, because
he's pristine.
Pristine always, but then on occasion gets mortally wounded and is fine, but then gets beat up sometimes and is not.
Well, that's a great lead-in. So Jack's backstory, which is what I think a lot of the viewers have been waiting for the longest time, is the first one we get handed. And it goes with this great sequence where we get to meet Victorian Torchwood, who are catty. I mean, I gotta dig them.
Yeah.
But man, it's like, I guess you have to have like a certain level of sass for the entry interview.
I mean, think about what they're dealing with way back when there's not technology. You have to have built up some level of sarcasm or coping mechanism, because otherwise you are not going to survive. Notice there's only two of them.
Yeah. That's right. That have survived, sure. Perhaps. I did notice that they are at a point chronologically, and I guess this sort of tracks with when the Queen founded Torchwood at the end of Tooth and Claw, I think?
Yeah, Tooth and Claw.
That we are not far from that point in our timeline, so they still see the Doctor as the threat. So that's a really interesting thing. That's that nice little tie-in that I think longer-term Doctor Who fans have been waiting for. They're like, well, you can't just throw this whole Torchwood thing out there and then not mention the Doctor. Oh, they do. Oh, and they're still mad. Okay, got it.
Well, remember we had a bit of the Doctor at the last season break as well. So I guess one season is the amount of time you're allowed to wait before mentioning the Doctor again.
If they had a second season of Class, they probably would have done a nice another little drop
button.
In appearance.
He's like the Daleks in Doctor Who.
Yeah. Contractually obligated to appear.
One mention. That's it.
Yeah.
But also, at the end of the season, where they've come around to him again, like, okay, he's all right now.
Regarding Jack's offer to be a part of Torchwood, well, sort of, I don't know, were they kind of blackmailing him a bit, or sort of holding it over him?
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they flat out told him at one point, like, it's like, you're either working for us or you're a threat, and you've seen what we do to threats.
And we know we can't kill you because we already tried that, so we're locking you in a deep, dark hole that you can't come out of. Would you rather be on our team or not? And then that he gets the prophecy at just the right time as well. We know it's true. However, I feel like they could have lied to him and he would have still joined for the the weight that that carried for him. In it was his whole goal at that point in time.
Right.
He was waiting for the doctor, and they could have paid some fake person to go and be like, can you just tell him that it's going to be a long time?
I liked everything about that sequence, about that particular sequence, with the exception of Jack's sideburns. But other than that, I think everything was, it was totally enjoyable. Those sideburns kind of made me cringy, though, like brown Brillo pads.
It was really fun, and it kind of fits with what we know of Jack from Doctor Who, too. It kind of helps to bridge that gap of, like, what we had seen from him previously versus what we've seen of him recently kind of thing. So it makes sense.
And I think sort of what we talked about in our last episode with the D&D squares is that you see where he would have over the course of over 100 years changed from him, the happy-go-lucky, like, bring it on, I can't die, to seeing his whole team get sort of slaughtered there at the end of his, mercy before killed. He takes over. Yeah, mercy killed. And then turning into him as the leader of these people that we will soon learn how he recruits them and how they become his family for now.
Right.
So I think it definitely, even though we feel like we know a little bit about Jack, it definitely fills in a lot of that and gives you his why.
I think it's good to have that reminder, too, of the fact that he had that chaotic point of origin, that he really was, you know, he was Jack for Jack's sake, and he was just out there doing Jack things until a higher purpose sort of slammed into him, and he probably wouldn't have sought it out independently if he hadn't been put in this sort of situation where it was, well, eternity of torture or indentured servitude.
And he's already done work like that before. And that we know from his interactions with John Hart, which we then come to wrap this episode with. But
right.
So it, in that way too, it kind of speaks to the whole journey that Jack's been on.
Yeah. I think Chibnall does an excellent job. We saw it in the previous episode, and we see it in any of the ones that he pens. I think he finds, there are a couple of characters I think he finds particularly interesting to play with, and he gives them the most interesting bits to work with. He may not be a particularly strong writer for Gwen. He is definitely not a necessarily strong writer for Tosh. We'll get to in a second. But he loves working with Jack. He loves working with Yanto. Loves working with Yanto. I think he channels himself a bit through Yanto.
Yeah,
but we'll get to that in a second.
Did Jack drop how many years old he was by this point? I was trying to remember if I missed that.
I don't remember him saying.
No. I think the only thing I recall is that he did mention in one of the later sequences that he was 51st century. But that was just in...
Right.
So Tosh gets the next sequence about getting sort of stuck in this situation where she was super meek, like more so than we know Tosh now. It's like Tosh boiled down to super Tosh as far as damaged self-image and things of that sort. But she's this brilliant mind. What was going through your head as far as when she starts getting these schematics and starts wiring all this stuff together and there's mention of Sonic going on, you're like, what are they ever working on here? Wait a second. What is this? How did this little flashback work for you as far as, do you think it was valid for the character or beneficial for Tasha's character?
Well, we saw that she's good with electronics and devices, which we already knew. We found out that, you know, she's very tight with her family, which we already knew. She does some shady things when she feels like she, which we already knew.
So this is just Jack springing her out of the pokey.
But yeah. I also think that there's something to be said for Tosh doing that on her own before she had a support system of Torchwood.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
That. So, but yeah, as far as developing new qualities that Tosh has? No.
So it's very much similar to what they did with Jack, where it's like, here's this person that has these abilities, that knows what they're doing, and we're giving them a direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do like the fact that they made such a point of her being able to create something that was from broken architecture.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a good example of Tosh being even more brilliant than she gives herself credit for, because she wasn't right. even aware. Like, her eyes moved right past the errors mm-hmm. in the schematics.
She's like, oh, I get what's going on here, so I'm just going to do it without even noticing that it was written down wrong. Yeah.
It's like not the – it's like not even following the letter of the instructions, but the intent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like she's working beyond that level. Like, she doesn't have to look down at the blueprints that often to know where she's headed, and her brain just goes, even though she doesn't realize posthumously that that's what she did. I think that mm-hmm. says quite a bit about her.
Yeah. Yeah. She's fixing problems that she didn't even realize she was fixing, because she's just so smart.
And yet it's still, you know, however many years later that we see her active with the team, she's still doing it. Like, mm-hmm. she's not growing as fast as we would want her to grow. She needs that catalyst with whatever is going to push her forward and make her put her confidence where mm-hmm. we would want it to be for her. She's had so many opportunities, and it looks like it's that deeply seated.
Yeah. I also think that it establishes her as a awkwardly trusting person, because she knew her mom was taken, but she just straight up handed over this thing that she built.
Yeah.
With no sort of sneaky, well, you show me her first and then I'll give mm-hmm. you the thing, or I put it in a box outside. Like, none of that kind
right,
of
no.
smart yeah. behavior, which is something that I still think that we see from her on occasion, like laying her stuff out there with Owen and other characters, and just with the woman that she was with for a little while too, right. like just mm-hmm. so vulnerable all the time, and still can't piece that together either. It's well, just
she's
her base character.
Yeah, that's who she is. She is like, I say something and I follow through on it, and that's how she views the world, because she doesn't know any other way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily label it anything naive or harmful. She's trusting, maybe trusting to a fault, but I think it goes hand in hand with her self-image, in the fact that she's always looking for the best in others, because that encourages her to feel better about her role in things.
I do have to wonder, though, what was the plan? Like, this woman built you this thing, and you were just going to Sonic shake her to death for having built it?
Yes.
That's cool plan, baddie.
Yeah, well, we only got up to step two on the global domination plan.
Didn't really think it was going to work, but brought the mom to trade off.
Now we get to Yanto. And this is interesting on so many levels. Not just the banter and the sniping at one another, and the I want in, you can't have in, but I really want mm-hmm. in, but you can't have in, but I'm going to stand here. It's like the say anything. He's out there with the radio on the front yeah. lawn kind of thing. But the whole idea of what happened to Torchwood London.
Yeah.
That's so much fun, because Chibnall is notorious for doing this, of filling in backstory to add texture and never paying off.
Mm.
It just gives you little threads that you can say, wow, that's probably some good fanfic right there, isn't it?
You always have to leave yourself an out. When you're a good writer, you give yourself stuff to be like, 20 years from now, yep, cherry pick that one right off the top. Gift to myself, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. That got him talking.
I just love how Yanto is, from the very beginning, like, the power of my coffee, will you have some? Yeah. It's like, these machines, they just talk to me. He's standing out on the wharf in the middle of the quay, yeah. and somehow that coffee is still like, oh,
right.
okay.
It's well, I mean, that in kind an of... open cup. It's just an open mug. Like, he just stole yeah. it from one of the restaurants just around the corner.
But did Yanto magic to it, like, spoke to the coffee and was like, you must be delicious, and then hands it over.
Really, I took that whole thing to be like, that is how meticulous Yanto is, that he knew when Jack was going to be leaving, so that he could still have a steaming cup of coffee in the hand. And
oh yeah, and that doubles up at the fact that he knows when to jump in front of the rover on some mm-hmm. rando street. I mean, he's yeah. just there. He's good at what he does. He tracks well, and he keeps details. He's the bookkeeper and the filesmith, right? So
yeah. So here's one thing though, that this episode always makes me want to go back and watch the beginning of this first season, because where Yanto is at that point, and with his girlfriend who turns into the half cyber woman.
Yeah.
I always, by the time I get here, have forgotten that is the next stage of Yanto before we see him progress over the next 2 years.
Yeah. Did it still make you wince a little bit when they name checked her?
A little bit.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. I always am like, oh, that's right. He wasn't just always with Jack. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, well, now I need to start over again. Cycle repeats.
Chibnall's still atoning for that story. Mm-hmm. but yes, as far as finally getting his opportunity to, by way of a pterodactyl, mm-hmm. to get himself on the team, I think is very, very Yanto. Very. I'm serious. I'm qualified for this. I need you to listen to me. Oh, by the way, pterodactyl.
It's like, oh, you're not going to listen to all my qualifications? All right, fine. Then you deal with the dinosaur.
That's an ace in the hole right there.
Yeah, right?
That's perfect. You save that one until dead last. Like, you know, you got the flop, the turn, the river, the whatever. I don't know how Texas Hold'em works, but you know, whatever is your final move.
You ran away with the deck.
Just flip the table. Pterodactyl!
I like Jack mentioning, related to the pterodactyl, but something about dinosaur breakfast at a time of the asteroids, and it was a weird story. I want to know that story. Where did that come from? Where did that go?
yeah, exactly. And then we get Owen's story. And I know we've grappled with Owen for two seasons now, come what may. And it seems like they've been trying, the collective writing guild here, has been trying very hard just in the last three, four stories to kind of walk this runaway near D-bag character back. Have they done it? With this sort of understanding of his kind of dark view, his just horrible overall behavior.
I feel like yes, it does kind of give a lot of information, or it makes some of his behavior make sense. You know, like you can absolutely see him becoming the, you know, completely unattached, doesn't want to get connected to anybody moving forward. But there are still, there's still standouts. Like, you know, he got so hung up on, I can't even remember her name, the pilot.
Right.
And then.
Not Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
Amelia Nearhart.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that doesn't really kind of like, I don't see him connecting that quickly with her if this was his background. And then also, it's too little too late. Like, had this happened 3 or 4 episodes into the first season, it's like, oh, okay, well, I understand why he's acting that way now, but it's so ingrained at this point that I don't want to like him no matter what. And it's like, yes, fine, you had a reason for maybe 6 of those occurrences, but it went on way too long without me knowing. So I don't think it was enough to fully atone for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like his overall theory on life isn't off, but I don't know that he carries it out. Like, he says that it's save one life. If he could save one life, then his would be worth it, but then there's always another life and another life. And that does weigh on him a lot, but like, feel like as the doctor of the group and as the person who's supposed to like have had, I don't know, those experiences, gone through med school and was apparently pretty good at what he was doing because of the practice he was in and always wearing those pinstripe suits. I mean,
clearly
that's a symbol of status.
Yeah. Right.
But I feel like he was so broken that he wouldn't have stuck with Torchwood. This isn't a job that you keep doing because you're run down that hard.
Hmm.
I
wonder if it's a matter of the work with Torchwood ends up unexpectedly, not something that he would have had any way of knowing when he accepted. being a part of that collective or doing this sort of, you know, fringe of the world, really, fringe of creation kind of work, filled a different sort of need for him that might have been completely outside of this. So his attachments and his skewed sense of relationship and those things, that's a mess in and of itself. But if he's clearly a very fractured character, there may be other things that working with this team of misfits really soothed for him.
He got free access to, you know, rape cologne, so that kind of
sure.
Yeah, that's but true. Years into it though.
True.
Like, I know that pain and despair and all of that, there's not a time limit for what you can feel and how far you can fall. But we've at this point, that was 4 years ago, and it's been about 2 years since Gwen joined. Mm-hmm. So we've been watching him continue to spiral for two additional years after having a relationship with Gwen, with Amelia Earhart, with this, like, some of these other things that he's...
Well, and I mean, before we even met him, there was Susie and Tasha.
Yep.
Like, so it's, yeah, he's run through a few, but...
Right. So this sounds like, so say he comes into this opportunity or this offer as a broken human, right? It kind of goes with that analogy of like a bone that's not set right is going to be more problematic later. Mm-hmm. So now he's healed broken. So now, given the opportunities, the access to the weird alien technology, the all these other things that the prestige and the reach of Torchwood provides, ends up taking some of those really dark facets of his persona and allowing him to feed those. Mm-hmm. So while he's doing some things for the greater good or what have you, he's also a right dick about a lot of other things that he didn't even have the opportunity to explore before.
Mm-hmm. It does explain his really nice flat, though, from that one episode.
Yes.
And I will say that the idea of him feeling that way of like, you know, his, if I can save a life, mine's worth it, really does fit with what we learned about him from the Adam episode, where, you know, he was made to feel worthless because of his mom, because of how she treated him. And so it's like, yeah, that really does line up with what we saw later on or what he said. So
I still wonder, I think I've asked this before. I wonder if there ever was, even at a skeletal level, a character Bible. Mm. For this series, that some of the initial season or two seasons of writers had to work from and say, you know, here are some of the tenets that make up this archetype and play within this sandbox.
Yeah.
He's just got to be a right mess. Anyway, well, so.
I mean, what would happen to you if an alien started crawling out of your fiancé's brain and you didn't know what?
That is one of the skeeviest things I think they've put on the show as far as visuals. I get a little, like, I'm not one for a lot of surgical shows and, you know, things that... I don't really need to see a whole lot of that, but I don't expect, you know, open brain surgery here, you know, cracked craniums and whatnot to start wiggling and waving at me.
Right. Yeah. The fact that you can see the starfish before you ever even get around, it just, yeah. Like I've been in surgeries. I'm used to this kind of, and that I was kind of like, yeah, I'm going to look at my phone and yeah.
But so on that note, though, Jack recognizes, he lets Owen go in, and he says, yeah, there was a gas. It killed all these other guys. It's a quick gas. It dissipates, right? Uh-huh. But leaves the creature there for Owen to go in and see. And does he dispose of it afterwards? There was no team rushing in from Torchwood that we could see. Every example of every episode where we've seen them interact with those instances... Mm. They mind wipe everyone real fast and clear the bodies out so that no one has to experience that. But not this guy.
Well, I'm of the mindset that he knew he wanted to recruit Owen. Like, he was like, I mean, he's a brilliant doctor. Like, I'm looking at his records. Everything was already going off the rails because his fiance was, you know, having, like, he's, you know, perfectly mentally broken for Torchwood. So... all I've got to do is let him see this alien and...
So then what does that say about Jack?
Jack planted the brainfish.
Oh, jeez.
It was all a setup.
don't not believe it. It's for the greater good. I mean, we're about to learn. Decisions are made.
We know that Jack likes to make those hard decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So that brings us to the point where Gwen and Reese sort of haphazardly get everybody out of their precarious situations. Miraculously, Tosh has a banged up arm, but Owen, the most fragile of fragile, comes hopping out of there like everything's fine. Yeah, really got my head cut off.
He was just laying on a pile of bricks. That's all.
Only to find out where the bums came from.
Le bombs.
Le bombs. So, nice little hi, did you miss me?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of appearance. And then he plays the gray card. And I remember when I was first seeing this, first watching Torchwood as a series of Netflix DVDs. Remember DVDs? I sent you the mail.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, who the hell is this guy? I could not remember Gray.
I was pretty emotional episode where we met him.
It was a hologram.
It wasn't a hologram.
That was appearing in front of
Oh, you mean this. I thought you meant the episode where we met Gray.
Oh, yeah. No. That was all. But once I connected, I'm like, oh, okay. Well, this is a very strange poll. How are they doing this? Oh, it's John Hart. He's a time traveler, too. Got it. But when he first pops up next to Obi-Wan there, I'm like, who the heck is this? And I'm looking at Jack, and Jack's crumbling, and everything's gone wrong. I'm like, why is he so emotional over this kid? It took me, honestly, I remember this. I had to wait for because the end credits on Torchwood episodes go by really fast. Because I got so many people that just whizzes by. I remember having to pause the DVD player to see who was being credited. Like, who's the one character in this who's being name-checked that I don't recognize? And then I saw Gray. I'm like, Gray. And I had to put it together in my head. I didn't have, a Wikipedia really quickly at hand.
IMDb existed back then.
It was spotty.
Yeah, that's true.
It hadn't been all filled out. They were crowdsourcing it. But, it must have been at least a day before it clicked.
Mm.
Because I didn't want to watch the second half. The next week's episode next week as if we're gonna watch this next week, we might, but yeah, it finally clicked. I'm like, oh, okay, why? And then I just spent the rest of the week wondering why. So good job on that cliffhanger.
yeah.
It. I don't know. I was one the thing that really, and this is a stupid thing to get hung up on, but I'm like, Jack does the display of John. And then John does the display of Gray, and I'm like, I don't think that's how holograms work. Like, I don't think, can you just, that doesn't work like that. No, but.
They're spacey grids.
I took it that Gray was with John, and so he was just sort of opening up the beam of the hologram, and that was it like a message, or it was coded that when he walked out of the building, it would play no matter which direction he sort of walked out of that.
Yeah.
Geo-coded area is how I took it.
Geo-targeting advertising. That's
before it was a thing, yeah.
John was the first.
Well, because he says, I don't know if you're receiving this, if you've lost any members of your team, but I know you're alive.
Yeah.
Har, har, har.
Har, har.
All this to get a jilted lover back.
But I don't remember why he's even doing this.
That was my guess.
That was the thing he said, was that it was, just maybe now you'll spend some time with me or something like that, and it's like, I don't like this. Seems ridiculously long setup for that. Like it almost feels like this could have been a separate episode, and they're just like, oh well, we need a two-parter to finish off the series. Well, just I don't know, tack something on the end so they're together. Like it didn't seem like one inherently led into the other.
I'll have to get back to you on that after I watch the next.
And that's
one.
That's the thing. Like I don't remember what comes next, so I'm just saying the button that would. Got tagged onto the end of this. It's like, okay, that explains where the bombs came from, but any other excuse could have fit just as well. Like it doesn't.
It is a little like it's a very stark bookend because it just you only need the first 2 minutes and the last 2 minutes to be able to put it in this Captain John sandwich here. But
he would like that.
But I'm losing my train of thought here. But I think it's rather effective. For for tying a clearly a flashback episode into the greater picture. But my question, and this is kind of the wrapping point that I want to throw here, was this the right time, two seasons deep into a series that was supposed to be all drama, action, characters, lust, shooting, bang, bang, aliens, time travel, craziness, to say, all right, now, in the penultimate episode, here's how we got here.
No, and see, that's what I was saying, is like, had we found this stuff about Owen earlier, it might have been okay. But this is too long. We've already know these characters. Like, you're not changing anyone's opinion, right? You know, it's just, you're filling in some blanks that at this point we don't necessarily need filled in. Like, yeah, it's nice to have the stories, but it's not necessary. Whereas if you had done it halfway through or, you know, three quarters of the way through series one, yeah, I feel like it would have made a difference. The one that I always come back to is if you look at Firefly, the out of gas episode, you know, like that's, I feel like that was the perfect kind of flashback episode. You know, it's like right. It had a story of its own that made sense. It made sense why you're getting all the flashbacks, not just like, oh, this person's life's in danger, so I guess we'll show you what came previously because they can't do anything stuck under rubble. So, you know, it's just, I feel like it could have been handled better. I like the stories we got. It just, I wanted more. I wanted it to mean more than it did.
See, and I am of... are we going spoilery here, or are we going to let this one play out during the next episode? Because I know what happens.
No, let's let this play, because we've got some folks that are watching this.
As we go. All right. Well, okay. Then I disagree with Jay for reasons that will be happened next time. And we can talk about it then.
Right. No, for those same reasons, I understand where you're coming from, but looking at this as moving through, not knowing anything leading up to it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel like had it come earlier in season one, season two, I feel like it's partially, you're still getting used to those characters. And while, yes, we've been able to pinpoint them because we talk about them and we analyze them and we sort of knew where all of this was kind of coming up to. But if you throw something like this into a show like this, when it's not an emotional, like, we're sticking you with this because this is how much these people mean to each other at this point. You're almost putting on the brakes halfway through a season when people just want the action delivery.
Advance the plot.
Like, this is a take a look back because it's the penultimate episode, okay. And that's not too spoilery to say.
For the other side of that coin, though, had we gotten this early on, we could have gotten to the point where we liked Owen and we rooted for him, to where when he got shot, we weren't all like, oh, thank God he's done. You know, or if we had figured out all of this stuff about Tosh early on, could they have developed her further? We know they wouldn't have, because why would they? But, you know, like, we could have moved her forward because they could establish, like, all of these things about her that we learn later on. So it's like, I feel like this would have been a good building episode so that they could advance the characters further.
Did they know, though, if this was, like, I know it, way back when's, did they know they were getting picked back up again? Or is this sort of, like, their last final push to try to secure what's coming next?
I'm not certain. I'm pretty sure that they had the season prepped in full fairly early on, as far as their, you know, the way that they had planned their production blocks and things. Yeah. Whether or not they had gotten the green light from BBC Drama to take it further to another season, not really sure. Because at this point, a lot of things were, well, I want to think, where was the writers' strikes fitting in around all this? Might have to go back and check that. But, I mean, just... again, not to spoil anything, we know that the third season doesn't follow nearly the same kind of format as the first two as far as episode count and stuff like that. So, you know, it feels like they decided to do something very different with it, maybe under advisement from the executives, or maybe it was something where they knew that they were going to take two seasons to do some storytelling because they had this mini-series sort of story that they really wanted to tell, and they needed to make sure that we were in a certain position to broach that. I don't know. As far as what both of you are saying about is there an ideal place for an episode of this sort? Taking off the bookends, right? Just looking at the flashback components of this episode, maybe not necessarily with John Hart involved in the machinations. I could even see the idea of, we've had very special episodes before for each of these characters, but to varying degrees of success or failure, right? If Cyberwoman was Yanto's very special episode, that ain't enough.
Mm-hmm.
If we were left with nothing but the Out of Time and Amelia Earhart to be Owen's humanity establishing story, didn't quite do what we wanted with. And Tosh never really had one. We just had Sad Tosh becoming even more Sad Tosh. So I like the fact that this was all pulled together in one chunk, and it needed something to say, here's a reason why we've sidelined all of our characters long enough to have this. Like the mechanics of why, you know, put them in the situation where they're all knocked out and we have to have this little backstory for each one of them in turn, I like the structure of it quite a bit. Similarly, as far as the way Out of Gas did it for the Firefly team.
That is my favorite Firefly episode, by the way.
It is many's. But as far as would it have worked as a mid-season break or something of that sort?
Give it to me at the end of season one.
Well, remember how we wrapped up season one? That was another thing where you kept wondering, like, where are they going to go with this? And then it'll... big old thing, Doctor. Credits.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess you couldn't have placed it there because that was all about Jack.
Yeah, and you needed that.
And we learned a lot about Jack just now, but we learned a lot about Jack this season.
Quite a bit.
That if we put this history of Jack before all of that history of Jack, I feel like it would have been out of place.
Season one was really getting to know and following Gwen.
Mm-hmm.
Season two is definitely... Jack, as far as making sure that we are more emotionally invested, not only in who he is, but why he is, without necessarily really getting that many answers.
Which then goes to say that this is a good button for the season where we learn why Jack chose each of them.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens next time.
If this had been something where, if they, I know it absolutely wasn't the case, where, you know, you've heard of showrunners who have the entire story mapped out well in advance, and they're just finding writers that can take, you know, get me from here to here, get me from here to here, and so on. That he knew he was going to do this thing, that Chibnall knew he was going to do this in the final two episodes, where he said, I need to establish everything that's linking my team together. I need to make sure Jack's leadership qualities have something new for viewers to chew on and all this. Then I would have loved to have breadcrumbs through this season saying something like, you remember when I found you?
Yeah.
That, you know, and just...
I mean, in Adam, he goes to each of them and does that awkward hand put on your shoulder thing. But that's him saying, like, I got you. Take this thing. I got you.
Which now,
drink this
but
juice.
That, that feels a little bit out of place now, right?
Yeah.
Because if that was establishing Jack as the as boss daddy... Daddy boss, father captain. This did a better job of that. So,
but you're asking for a breadcrumb to get you here. That's a breadcrumb. It also places, like I think we even made the comment, it places Jack in the history of being on Team Torchwood in that episode with the Travelers.
Right.
That he was on a mission for Torchwood. He tracked these people around and failed at his mission and then forgot because it was 100 years ago.
I didn't really want the job in the first place.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't feel like it's out of place. And I feel like it's an emotional journey that you take throughout this episode. And you could have lost one of them just now. Like,
yeah.
Owen, every single time I thought, it was going to slide and you were just going to, it was going to clip some bit of him.
For the rest of the season, he'd have to have this weird patch on his face.
Yeah.
So, but all in all, whether or not you consider this to be the ideal position to drop an episode of this sort, I think the episode itself is really, really strong. I like a lot about it.
Yeah. And I'm not willing to say if I recommend it until we finish the next one.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah, I mean, it is a great episode. As much as I'm nitpicking it, I do feel like this outshines most of this the show so far. So, yeah, absolutely stellar.
The peaks that we've had here in season two are really, really high peaks.
Yes,
so
very much so. So next week, we're going to be coming back with our classic rewatch with Four to Doomsday.
Yes. Let's just say, if you got a show about time travel, you got to have something where you steal a bunch of people out of time and slam them all together, because it worked for Bill and Ted.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to this then. Bill and Ted in Classic Who? I like it.
Well, let's just say maybe it was the seed for the idea or something. I don't know.
There's time traveling and there's phone booths.
Yeah, Tegan was not working on the history report.
Well, I get it.
I mean, I would have settled for Nyssa with a tambourine, but you know, it's whatever.
There you go.
Well, this has been episode 421 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, did I ever tell you about the story about how Kier and I met? Yeah, it's a story for another time.
And this is Kier saying, you smell like that naturally?
This is Julie saying, the gray card is the most coveted of all Uno cards.
We'll see you next week.
I'm Ozzy.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.